This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Got a good text here. Says, hey, why are you guys surprised about J.P. Crawford? He is the nephew of the great Carl Crawford. Why would you be surprised about J.P. taking a huge step forward? And that comes from the 971 on the Mac and Jack's text line. You're right, he is. Here's why I'm surprised. He's someone who was a high-profile prospect in the Phillies organization. And the Phillies, kind of their timeline changed, and they ended up deciding, okay, we need a shortstop that can contribute right now. They traded Crawford as part of the package for Gene Segura, and over the course of his first couple seasons in Seattle, he developed, J.P. Crawford, to his credit, developed into an incredible fielding shortstop. I don't know if anybody saw this as the natural evolution or natural next step for him to be this kind of hitter. To talk about that, we've got Ryan Divish joining us from the Seattle Times. First of all, Divish, thank you very much for waking yourself up early this morning to talk to us, chuckleheads.
I'm old man now, Danny. I get up early every day.
Do you really?
I want to or not, I just wake up. I mean,
good for you. Good for you.
No, not good for me.
No, come on, early birds get the worm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I only sleep about 5.5 to 6 hours a night at the most, so I don't really. I for whatever reason I operate on that. I blame my mom, who's the typical Asian tiger mom. Sleeps 4.5 hours, wakes up, and is all excited, ready to start her day. So her fault.
Most people would thank their parents for passing down such a hardworking, hard driving, and you instead wish you could be lazier, and you blame your genes and your lovely mother for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I am smart in that I won't probably marry into Asian blood since I have it. I'm like you, that, you know, who are you, are afraid of your wife as well, so I understand that. That's okay.
Ryan, J.P. Crawford's had a huge breakthrough this season. Did you see this coming?
No. I didn't see the offense. You know, actually, I saw the offense that he's kind of giving up now, the type of hits he's getting, the slashing, the doubles, the singles. What happened, I think, and it happens to a lot of players, and I think partially on the organization as well, partially on J.P., but you know, he got caught up in bulking up a little bit and trying to hit for more power. I mean, we live in a power game. And so in the last couple of years, he's talked about adding weight, adding strength, which I think is important, but also just trying to drive the ball more and maybe trying to hit more homers. I don't think they ever thought he was going to be a 30 home run guy, but, you know, you get caught up in trying to elevate the ball a little bit. And basically what it does is it takes you away from your identity as a hitter. And I think the Mariners have had a couple guys that have kind of fallen victim to that. Evan White, J.P. Crawford, and you just – sometimes that's not who you are. Not everybody can elevate and celebrate, as they say. So I honestly think – and the teeth of the youngest level, too, is I think it's colossally stupid. You're already paying $75 for a hitting lesson from a coach. Don't teach them to be somebody they're not. I think at the end of the day, just hit the ball hard. If you hit the ball hard – good things usually happen. And I think that's what JP had talked about, is just getting back to hitting the ball hard and having competitive at bat instead of worrying about whether or not he hit it in the air or how much backspin it had or how far it carried. Just hit the ball hard and move on. And that's kind of what he's done.
Ryan, what are you seeing out of Markle right now?
I think he's starting to get back to where he was at the, you know, kind of last year and even like at the beginning of. You know, he struggled early on at the beginning of the season, and then he kind of had that little run there right before he got hurt where he started to look like the same Marco Gonzalez. And I think we're starting to see him get back to that, the command's getting better, all that stuff. I mean, like, I never really worry about Marco. I don't always know that he's going to be the guy that dominated maybe the way we saw last year, but particularly in 2019. But I don't think he's ever going to be a guy where you walk out there and say you don't know what you're going to get. He's always going to keep you in games. He's always going to be competitive. Sure, there's going to be a couple times where he gets knocked around pretty good because that's what, you know, as a command type of pitcher, there are just days when your command isn't there and guys will hit you. But for the most part, I mean, you know, when he steps on the mound, I think the Mariners believe they have a pretty good chance of winning that game regardless of who they're facing.
he's such a tough competitor, Marco is. I've also wondered and found myself wondering, I know after he came back from the surgery, there was some quite how often he would throw his cut fastball. Is he limited in anything? I know he's back from the forearm strain. Is there anything that's tough for him to throw or that he's worried about throwing because of the strain it puts on his arm?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think the cutter is an issue really either. He just hasn't commanded it maybe as well. And I think one thing with Marco is he tries to not get into patterns because he is a command guy. And so, you know, if the cutter is really working, guys will go up and look for it and maybe try and drive it. So he tries to pitch, you know, opposite of what guys think and react. He talked about him and Tom Murphy taking some risks when it came to pitching. Same with Terenz now calling games. Take some risks, try some different stuff than maybe you've done before, because you don't want to be predictable when you don't have overpowering stuff. You know, if they have an idea of what you're going to throw and you don't throw hard enough to you know, induce kind of weak contact, then you've got to be a little different. And I think that's kind of where he's at. You're right. It's like the competitive nature, and he is so competitive, and I think people feed off that. It's similar to JP in that way. And look, like, I'm not saying that you have to be a competitive person to get to the big leagues because it's hard. But this team with these guys, it's one of the more competitive teams and more intense teams I've been around. JP, Mitch Haniger, like I used to call him a cyborg because he wasn't human. He didn't seem to enjoy baseball because he took it so seriously. Marco, you know, these guys are so competitive. And Danny, I think if you remember, the first team I ever covered on an almost daily basis with the 2008 team that lost 101 games, and it was the biggest collection of jerks and miscreants and just guys playing out the string. Like, and to see this and to see what they have now, it's so different, and it's kind of refreshing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's really refreshing. Ryan, you also in a mailbag asked a question that I think it's got to be getting easier for the Mariners to answer it, which is Yusei Kikuchi. He's got a bit of a complicated contract. At the end of this season, just after the World Series, the Mariners have to decide whether or not to exercise a 4-year, $66 million option. I think that's getting easier for them. I mean, they have to do it, right? He's looking really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, could you get – so Kikuchi will be 30 years old. So if they don't exercise the option, he can come back for next year at $12 million, or he can opt out and be a free agent. His agent is Scott Boras, so, I mean, I think Boras would say, hey, look, you've got this monster year. You're throwing 95, your cutter's 91. Yeah. Let's get you on the open market. So in that case, would the Mariners be able to find a 30-year-old pitcher, left-handed, with the sort of stuff that Kikuchi has, the sort of work ethic Kikuchi has, for less than 4 years, $66 million? I don't think they can. I mean, Patrick Corbin, a few years ago at a similar age, got $120 million. I believe. Yeah. So I don't think that they want to do that. I mean, like, we may know more in the next, you know, 17 starts that he makes, whether that is or isn't. But you also have to ask yourself, too, where are the Mariners at on their pitching depth chart that they have somebody that's better than Kikuchi in this organization? Because, Logan Gilbert is the top prospect, and he's looked really good lately, but he's still a largely unfinished product and got some time to go. And if you look at the top pitching prospects in the minor league system, you know, Emerson Hancock, George Kirby, Brandon Williamson, Isaiah Campbell, Juan Tan, both guys are all about 2 years away. I mean, only Williamson is pitching at AA, and Kirby and Hancock are on strict inning counts this year to the point where you can't rely on them next year. I just think if you have a known, established product, then you have to pay the money for it. I just don't understand any way you couldn't because, like, you know, again, you're looking at either the free agent market or what you have being better than Kikuchi. I don't think they have that. And, you know, the Mariners also have set themselves up to reduce payroll so much. Kyle Seager's contract is coming off the books next year. You have additional money. It's time right now to start using the payroll flexibility that they've gotten for the last 3 years and start investing in players, whether it's players in their organization like Kikuchi or Mitch Haniger, and also investing in players outside the organization.
Ryan, the Mariners are 38-36, third in the AL West. They put four good games together, what they've won seven of their last eight. Is this where you expected this team to be around this time of the year?
No, not even a little bit. I think I had them winning, or I think I had them losing 90 games or 95 games. And honestly, like, that stretch when they got swept by the Tigers and they got or got swept. I think maybe lost three or four, whatever. That's Tigers, and got no hit, and then they got killed in San Diego. I was like, yeah, this is the team. And then they've come back, and they've done that. They'll go on a seven-game stretch where they look abysmal and won't hit, and then they go on another seven- or eight-game stretch where they hit, they have great at-bats, and, you know, they win games. Part of what's made them, allowed them to get to this point, one, they play superior defense. You know, J.P. Crawford in the middle, they've gotten great production at second base. Seager's always solid. Their outfield is a lot better. I mean, we're 2 years removed from Tim Beckham starting at shortstop and Domingo Santana in right field and God. Daniel Vogelbach at first base and Jay Bruce at first base and the rotting corpse of Edwin Encarnacion having to play first base at like 107 years old. Like, I mean, if you recall right, in Japan, they started Ryan Healy at third, Tim Beckham at shortstop. D. Gordon was running around trying to be Kelly Leak, making every play in the infield because nobody could field the ground ball. And now they've got guys that are legit athletes. And then you look at the outfield, Haniger, you know, I don't know that Fraley's a true center fielder, but he makes plays. He's not afraid to run into the wall like Malik Smith. You know, the left fielders that they've had, Trammell, he's okay. You know, when Kelman comes back, he's solid. Like, they have better athletes and better defensive players. So that reduces the idea of giving away free runs or free bases because they're pretty solid. They run the bases well, and their bullpen's been outstanding. And their bullpen's been outstanding without investing any money into it. I mean, if you look at it, like, Rafael Montero was a trade for some really young prospects, and guys like JT Chargois and Drew Steckenrider and Paul Sewald, these guys are like minor league signs, and they've been some of their best relievers to go with the guys they've had, like Graveman. So I don't know if the bullpen success is sustainable, but that's how they got here, is bullpen and defense. And, you know, they've hit just enough, and they've got just enough starting pitching to keep them there. But when they just kind of keep one-run games at one run, and that's allowed them to come back and win a lot of these games.
We're talking to Ryan Divish. He covers the Mariners for the Seattle Times. Last question for him here, Ryan. How's the rebuild going? Because Kelnick's didn't have success when he was brought up. He's back in Tacoma and has started hitting again. Kyle Lewis is hurt. Evan White's banged up and really wasn't hitting before, and now you kind of wonder how much that... Those are three guys that are kind of players that are seen as part of the nucleus that aren't really contributing to this, yet this team is outperforming expectations. How would you characterize the rebuild as it's progressing right now?
Yeah, I think it's still really to be determined in terms of when it's going to be the ETA for, like, success. You know, you can't use the results of the wins at 38 and 36 to be, oh, yeah, it's going great because they're 38 and 36. And we just talked about all the reasons why and whether or not it's sustainable. What truly makes, like, what Jerry DePoto tried to sell on the rebuild is, like, look, we're going to build a young core of players first that are club controlled, that you're going to have around for 6 to 7 years in a package or in a group together, and then you're going to supplement. Well, the young core of players that you're talking about, Kyle Lewis, because of the knee surgery, you got to think that he probably can't be an everyday center fielder anymore. You're going to have to move into a corner. You're going to have to DH him 3 days a week. And that's a knee issue that's going to be there forever. You don't get new knees unless you're 50 and you get a replacement. Jerry Kelnick, I don't think we can really truly say whether that was, you know, who he is as a big league player. I think he was rushed a little bit, but I understood the reasons. But yeah, also like Justin Sheffield, Justin Dunn, we don't really know who they are. Yeah, Sheffield was great last year. This year he's been inconsistent. Dunn has looked great early, but now he's injured. You know, what you mentioned, White, all these guys, you don't truly know any of them anymore. Like, they're not established big league players. JP Crawford is technically part of that group, of that, like, kind of nucleus. He's the only one that you can sit there and say, okay, this isn't who he is as a big league player. And we still don't even know if that offense is, that's going to be who he is as an offensive player as well. So I think, you know, part of what makes a rebuild successful is having a young nucleus, and the young nucleus is still not showing that they're this group yet, that they're going to be relied upon to push forward. I think we've seen signs of it. I think, you know, with more time, or had they played 162 games last year and had a minor league season, so Evan White just doesn't have to wear it in a 60-game season when he's struggling, you could send him to Tacoma. I think that changes the math a little bit. But I don't know that we know that the step back or the rebuild is on a target date for the end of this season or even next season. And a lot will depend also on who they add this offseason. They could have changed the timeline a little bit had they bought, had they gotten Taiwan Walker, had they given Colton Wong and Taiwan Walker the extra years they were asking for and changed kind of the floor to ceiling ratio, which I hate using, but that's kind of where they're at. And that will be, that will be huge, these last, this last half of the season and how these young kids progress, and then also who they add to the nucleus next year to see if they can, they can expedite it a little bit more.
He is Ryan Divish. You can follow him on Twitter, where he's very amusing and occasionally takes barbs from me. You can also follow him in the Seattle Times. Divish, again, we're grateful that you're an old man who gets up early anyway, so you get up and talk to us.
Hey, Danny, I was wondering, though, if you look at Keenan Middleton when he's up at the big leagues, because he has all the hair, how big is his hat, do you think? And do you think it would fit your giant head? Because we've already established that your head is larger than mine.
It is, man. I ordered a 7 5/8 Mariners cap, and it was too tight. I had to send it back.
Oh,
I had to
get
a 7 3/4.
I mean, you're one burrito away from being Bruce Bochy right now.
It's true. It's totally true. What would you rather have, Divish? My hat full of nickels or $1 million?
It's even money there. You know, it's like playing blackjack. They offer you even money. You better just take it and run.
Divish, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya.
That is Ryan Divish appearing on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
That is an exceptional day.
In my defense, that 7 5/8 hat that I got was small for that size, because the other 7 5/8 hats fit me. That was just an unusually small 7 5/8. I think it was a 7.5 that they billed a 7 5/8. Just to be clear.
Hey, as a fellow big dome guy, I feel you, man. Don't worry, I feel you.
Aura, what's going on?
Hey guys, I actually just saw this right before we got started. It's a really quick clip, but I want to play it for you guys. It's a promo for LeBron's show on HBO, The Shop, that's premiering a new season this Friday, and it's Tom Brady talking about his free agency and a team that ended up not being interested, and he was thinking, you're sticking with that guy?
One of the teams, they weren't interested at the very end. I was thinking, you're sticking with that mother?
Apparently he said, whoa, that mother bleeper. People are speculating that it's Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you think?
Ooh,
oh, I love it.
You don't usually hear Brady like that straight out arrogant.
You never hear that.
He should
I
be.
I love it. You're absolutely right. I could see it being Garoppolo, right? That was a dude. Did they draft him in the second round? Was he a second round pick by the Patriots?
Third, I think, maybe.
He was drafted and developed behind. I could see that bringing out that of Tom.
Man, the older he gets, the more transparent he's getting, and I like it, man. I think he's accepting his GOAT status and saying, you know what, I can do some things that other guys can't. I can say some things that other guys can't. Looking forward to that episode.
Yeah, you're right, Danny. It was second round, 60-second pick overall.
Yeah, I like that from Tom. I think that's much more realistic to how he's approached things. I mean, I think he's someone that's got, he's got to have a huge, not just amount of confidence in himself, but I would think that that would be tough to watch the team you've played for and won so much for draft someone in the second round.
All right. Remember when Le'Veon Bell was upset with Andy Reid saying that he would rather retire than play for him again?
Yes.
But then, he came back.
Yeah. He came back and said, that's how I feel, but I shouldn't have said that, right? It was the apology. He apologized for speaking his opinion.
I apologize, but I don't regret it. And then Andy Reid basically tried to shove the whole thing aside, said, I wish him well. Now Le'Veon Bell spoke to the New York Times, was told that Andy Reid wishes him well, and this was his response. LOL, that's cap. For those of you who aren't cool like me, my mom says I'm cool. That's cap means that's a lie.
So he's saying that he thinks Andy Reid doesn't wish him well?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
Isn't that, I mean, does anyone really wish anyone well when they say they wish them well? Half the time, that's what you say about someone you don't like.
Right. But I don't think Andy Reid is like, oh, I don't think Andy Reid's going to spend another second in his career thinking about Le'Veon Bell.
True.
Like,
no.
What does he care? He didn't. That's weird.
I don't think that Andy Reid's like, oh, I hope this guy never plays in the NFL again. I hope his career is over. Yeah. No, I don't think that. I just don't think he doesn't care. He's like, whatever. Good luck to you. I'm going to go ahead and coach this Super Bowl contending football team, and hopefully you find a job.
He is. Andy Reid is like the bouncer at closing time. When he comes up to the dude and says, you don't have to go home. You just have to get on up out of here.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he's. Hey, I'm not telling you what to do, and I'm not saying. You just got to go. I hope you find somewhere else to have fun and continue your evening, but it's not going to be here. Like, he bounced him out of the club. It's not personal. It's not like it's got some sort of grudge against him. He just got to get to stepping.
This is a shout out to all my Cougs. If you were in Pullman the last maybe 10 to 12 years, at the end of the night at Mike's, the DJ used to hop on and say, the double doors. Head towards the double doors. That's all Andy Reid is saying.
Yeah.
Go to the double doors, man. Time to go. It's all
good.
Keep
it moving.
All right, guys. Sean McVay was a part of Albert Breer's Football Morning in America column this week. He said, he talked to him about the fact that McVay's mentioned his coaching style possibly leading to burnout in the past. And McVay said, we talked about the burnout and things like that, but I say this and I really mean it. I feel like I'm 30 years old again in a lot of good ways because of the people I'm around and the place I'm in. Guys, he's 35. So how do you feel like you're 30 again? It's not even that
yeah.
far.
Yeah. He's... Maybe this is just young and inexperienced, right? Like, maybe we're seeing not in terms of his scheme or anything like that, but he has talked about sort of how hard he works, and usually the coaches that do that are either young or insecure, right? Because everybody works pretty hard in the league. And if you're sitting there talking about, and he has kind of been the, I get up and grind, and maybe this isn't sustainable, but now you start talking about, come on. He's trying to sell us on the idea that he feels 30 again because he's got Matt Stafford.
My guy don't even have kids yet, man. I can see if you were 30 and now 35, you got kids. Like, yeah, I feel. Nah, I mean, you ain't got kids. Holla at me when you got three kids, 11, 9, and 7. And, yeah, whatever makes him feel good. You have to play tricks with your mind, right? You got to trick yourself into believing certain things. And maybe that's what he's doing, but he's a. He's not single. He has a supermodel wife. He has a great house. He doesn't have kids. He has a great job. He's this mind psychology. He's messing with himself right now.
And I'm sorry, guys. Football Morning in America is Peter King's. It was Monday Morning Quarterback.
I can't believe that. I'm aghast. It was Monday Morning Quarterback instead of Football Morning in America? Egads.
I didn't want to credit the wrong publication.
You're very thorough. Your thoroughness and trustworthiness is noted.
All right. Last one here. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has refused the Washington Football Team's request to trademark that name, Washington Football Team, concluding that the name refers to a geographic area that is too generic and that the notorious trademark squatter, Martin McCauley, already submitted an application for the name.
Good. I'm glad they can't trademark it. I think they should put it on the side of the helmet, just say football, or like a picture of a football should be their logo. Like, they're the generic team that didn't pay the licensing rights. They're the off-brand video game that instead of having Joe Montana has Joe Idaho playing.
They're the NBA 2K number 99 is Michael Jordan. It's not Jordan, but it's Michael Jordan. And is it that hard to pick a name that isn't offensive? Just pick a name. Pick a name. Everyone's going to get behind this. Pick a name. Don't be so scary. Make a decision.
Did you see the list of possible names they put out? It is that hard for them.
Yeah, they had some bad suggestions. It also is like we're so shocked that we had to change our nickname, which was actually a racial epithet, that it's taken us 2 years to decide on a successor. Like, it makes it look like you're either too sad to pick a new nickname or weren't prepared at all for something that was very much should have been seen as a corporate possibility at that franchise. I like Ron Rivera.
Yeah.
Every part of that business side of that franchise, though, I think should be tossed out of the league.
Let Ron pick the name.
Yeah. That'd take about 5 minutes. The Washington Riverboats. Riverboat Ron. Put Ron's face on the side of the helmet. Be all for that. It is Danny and Gallant. Ryan Divers said something to us about the rebuild process and what we should expect or what it says going forward. We'll touch bases on that as the Mariners are coming off of a sweep.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
How do you feel about your Mariners this morning? You got to be pretty pumped. This is one of the really good signs of your rebuild. You just compared it to, you saw a landmark along the way. You've been given directions to where you're looking to go. It's a place you've never been before, a rebuilt team. And you just passed a landmark, a four-game sweep of the Tampa Bay Rays. And while that doesn't mean that you've arrived at your destination, is a really solid sign for a team that has suffered a number of injuries this year and has continued to fight and battle through that and has a really tough team that is starting to hit not just its top four guys, not just its veterans, but you're starting to see contributions from younger players.
Starting to see it. Shed Long, Grand Slam. JP, first career Grand Slam. Kikuchi, looking good on the mound. Marco might not be throwing all of his stuff, as you mentioned, Danny, but he's a competitor. He's the heartbeat of that team. It was nice to see Mitch Haniger kind of get the party started. But we all knew that he's not really part of the rebuild, right? He's just a piece. He's a guy who's going to be there, a veteran you lean on. But the rebuild are these younger guys. And these younger guys are starting to make some plays. The only position that concerns me with the young guys is the pitching staff. Like, you know, Sheffield has struggled a bit. Justin Dunn has struggled a bit. Those guys are kind of like the missing links. They still have Kelnick, who's down, and the minors trying to improve, doing his thing. What'd you say? He was 3 for 14 the past few days. He's starting to improve. You're right, Danny. You know, my grandpa told me you're going to make it right at the big old oak tree. Then you're going to see a McDonald's on the left side, and you know you're heading in the right direction. That's what I feel right now. I'm with you.
The other big piece of news this morning is a Supreme Court ruling in which the case itself is more confusing and less straightforward than the decision. The decision was unanimous. The case involves educational benefits. It's not about college athletes getting paid. It's not about whether or not they can be market themselves for name, image, and likeness. It's about a cap on educational benefits that they could receive, that an athlete can receive, whether it's tutoring, whether it's computers, that there is a very firm limit to what schools are allowed to provide its athletes. And the Supreme Court in its decision said that you can't have that sort of cap. But the more significant part of this is actually the decisions, and at the risk of being wading into legalese, I want to read part of one of the Supreme Court justices, Brett Kavanaugh, part of his explanation of his decision, because I think it speaks to why this case is more important, that it is about more than just educational benefits. It's about the setup of the NCAA. This is Brett Kavanaugh. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. All of the restaurants in a region cannot come together to cut cooks' wages on the theory that, quote, customers prefer, end quote, to eat food from low-paid cooks. Law firms cannot conspire to cabin lawyers' salaries in the name of providing legal service out of a, quote, love of the law, end quote. Hospitals cannot agree to cap nurses' income in order to create a, quote, purer, end quote, form of helping the sick. And it really gets to that heart of amateurism that's there. So the reason that you're going to see a lot of talk about this, that shows very firmly that any cases this Supreme Court views that come in the question of compensation of student athletes, that they see, this Supreme Court sees the current setup of the NCAA as not just exploitative, but illegal.
Yeah. Any other student on campus can work. You know, that's part of just providing for yourself. And there are students on campus with academic scholarships. They can still work. There's a lot with academic scholarships. There's a lot of students on campus who have scholarships for being minorities. They can still work. It's just that for some reason, people look at athletes who have scholarships, and it's almost like they hate them. Like, oh, they're only here because they're playing football. Yeah, but I provide a service. You know what Harvard does? They try to get the smartest kids in the world to go to their school because it adds prestige to their school. It's, you guys are forgetting there's another angle to this thing. Other people get money to go to school, too, yet they're still allowed to work. And they're not necessarily making money for the school. These guys are making millions for the school. So let's have a little empathy for these guys. It's a privilege being an athlete. I understand that, but it's also a grind, man. And a lot of these kids don't make it because that grind is tough. I've seen a lot of guys fell out of school or just decide to quit because it's tough. So if you are selling number 5 Washington State jerseys, compensate the young man who made that jersey popular, please. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, and the NCAA has released its statement, and I'm going to read it, but then I'm going to tell you what it's actually saying. This is the NCAA. While today's decision preserves the lower court ruling, it also reaffirms the NCAA's authority to adopt reasonable rules and repeatedly notes that the NCAA remains free to articulate what are and are not truly educational benefits. Now, here's a quote from Mark Emmert, who I'm required to disclose as a UW graduate, much to my shame. Quote, even though the decision does not directly address name, image, and likeness, the NCAA remains committed to supporting NIL benefits for student athletes. Additionally, we remain committed to working with Congress to chart a path forward, which is a point that the Supreme Court expressly stated in its ruling, end quote. Here's the translation. We're trying to change. Don't throw us all out right now. We're trying to change. We get it. We get it that the setup is bad. We're trying to change. Please, please don't rule us to be entirely inconsequential. The NCAA is begging to be allowed to continue to have jurisdiction over student athletes because both legislatively now, in the courts, in the judicial system, you're seeing an assault and an undermining, declaring that the NCAA rules that they've been following for decades are illegal. And they're trying to remain relevant. So today's Supreme Court ruling, while it doesn't directly address athlete pay, certainly points toward the fact that there is massive change coming to college athletics, probably sooner rather than later.
Change is coming and they scared. They are so scared.
They're like, hey, we want a seat at the table. Mark Ebert's like, dude, don't throw me out because I lose my $5 million a year job. Like, it's begging for relevance.
Yeah, it's begging. They just want power. That's what it's all about. It's about power and control, and things are changing, so you better get used to it, NCAA. There's people that are coming to power who think differently. You know, it's not the same way of thinking there was 25, 30 years ago. And people are realizing that these athletes produce tons of money for their school. And they don't want to give them that little piece of the pie. It's not even a lot. Just give them a little piece of the pie. They're hungry, too. Let them eat.
It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus filling in for Paul Gallant, who will be back with us tomorrow. We raise flags next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Is that time we put together all that has occurred over the first 3 hours of not just this day, but this work week? It's a Monday. Bust out the brooms. Tidy up the cobwebs. The Mariners with a 4-game sweep. 3 of those victories over the Tampa Bay Rays coming in the final at bat. Got to be pumped, right? If you're a Mariners fan, you're feeling pretty good this morning. Chest puffed out. Yeah! Who are you raising a flag to, Bump?
Raising a flag? I'm throwing a flag. Oh. I'm throwing a flag to some of you listeners out there, man. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. Let me get that out there first. But let me tell you, these players, these NCAA athletes, need to get paid and or be able to work in the summer. Have you been in Pullman in the 509 in the Palouse during the summer where there's nobody there? You're working out to make sure you're ready to go for this football season and you can't work. I can't tell you how many ramen noodle meals that I had, how many times I ate cereal for dinner. Yet, I'm working. I'm trying to build my body to go play during the fall. It's just, it's tough, man. I'm not saying it's It's impossible, but it's tough. These same players who are providing a service for this university to go out there and make millions of dollars for them are struggling during the summer. It's hard to maintain weight. You end up eating junk food. Went to Jack in the Box because I had $5. I knew I can get 4 tacos and a junior bacon cheeseburger and some water and be straight. I'm just saying it is tough. I understand you guys have your concerns, these unfair advantages. Just take it from me, a guy who's been there before. These kids need to at least be able to work, especially in the summer when they have no money coming in, no scholarship money coming in. There's no more training table. They can't just go to the cafeteria and eat. They're on their own. Allow these kids to work. Chip them off a little bit of the jersey sales that they have just so they can survive during these hard times.
I don't understand the rationale for people that are passionate about the athletes not being paid. It's really hard for me because it is unique in industries where you have, if you want to be a professional football player and you graduate from high school, you're not allowed to play in the NFL for 3 years.
Yep.
The only viable path to you is to go and choose to, you're not working, you're going to school, but if you're not interested in school, you don't have any other option. That doesn't make any sense. That part is fundamentally baffling to me because the NFL is happy to outsource its minor league program to colleges. And so you get this goofy setup where the players, if you're a football player and you want to start making a living and start earning a wage, you legitimately can't do it between your high school graduation date and the NFL. And until there's an option there, it's really hard for me to describe, well, they make the choice. They know what the deal is. They don't have any other option. The NCAA football is a cartel, and it functions exactly like a cartel. You don't have any choice about whether or not you're going to do it, and you have to accept their rules because those are the rules they put in place. You don't have any. If you're a baseball player, what happens when you graduate? You want to go. You could sign a contract with a pro team and go play professional baseball. If you're a football player, what legitimate choice do you have? If you're a basketball player, now you can play in the G League. You can go play competitively overseas. There's no American Football League in Europe.
Yeah.
They got a monopoly.
No other option.
So, yeah, I agree with that flag. And all you listeners, why do you care if another person gets paid? Who are you sitting there to stand in another man and fatten his wallet? All you out there watching other people's pockets. A bunch of pocket watchers. I'm throwing a flag on Doc Rivers. First of all, because I like hearing Doc Rivers talk. But Ben Simmons, he's got a player that's going through it right now. Like, Ben, you know who knows most of all how broken Ben Simmons is right now? Ben Simmons. And you're an all-star. You're a former number one overall pick. You're a mainstay of the process. I want you to imagine, after last night, you're hearing your teammate, Joel Embiid, say that the turning point was, he didn't know how to say it, but you ended up turning down an open shot and making one free throw, which was a reference to you not trying to dunk it on Trae Young. And now here is what your coach said when he was asked about your future.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that.
Come on!
You gotta lie.
Doc!
Gotta lie.
Doc, you gotta lie. You gotta say something like, no one feels worse about what happened right now than Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
I know that Ben's gonna have plays. Like, there's so many different things you could say. Instead, you're like, hey, I don't know. I mean, that's basically like, you go ask Ben. You go ask Ben if he can be that. Come on. Come on, Doc. That's not cool.
And Ben ain't going nowhere. He'll be there next year. You know, like, you have to show support.
Do you think he's back? I think he's back. I don't know, man. That city's brutal. Carson Wentz got packed up out of there for less.
Well,
do you think he's back?
I think he's back. I think he's back. You have to give him, what, this is his third or fourth year in the league?
I think he just finished his third.
Oh, this is his last straw. Look, get in the gym, homie. Put up some jump shots. Work on that free throw. It's not hard to do. We've seen so many guys come into the league and develop a jump shot, develop a mid-range, get better at the free throw line. He just got to put in the work. He needs to have a serious talking to, at least. But you got to have his back. Even if you're going to trade him, you can't throw him under the bus like that. You got to show fake love in that situation.
Give him fake love. Say something. That was tough to listen. Maura, what do you got?
I'm going to go ahead and raise my flag for that cut we heard from Tom Brady. It's a real quick one. You almost can't hear exactly what he's saying because they all start laughing, but it's a promo for The Shop on HBO that a new season is premiering this week. And he was talking about teams that turned down his services in the offseason and being surprised they were going to stick with the quarterbacks they had.
One of the teams, they weren't interested at the very end. I was thinking, you're sticking with that mother...
Yeah, Tom.
I like it.
I want to see the petty side of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And everyone's assuming it's Garoppolo. I don't know.
Does everybody remember, like, when Tom was supposed to be the senior starter at Michigan, does everybody remember the quarterback that ended up getting and becoming the part-time starter there?
Yes.
No.
Drew Henson. He had been a bonus baby baseball player with the New York Yankees, and then he decided, I'm going to play college football. And he came in, and Lloyd Carr was the coach then at Michigan, was like, well, we're going to split the job between these two dudes.
And they,
I wonder
they
if there's
Greasy sometime, too.
Oh, was Greasy there as well?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was Greasy.
No, there was both. He had to fight both those guys for time at certain points.
If I was Brady, like, there's times where I would just kick up my heels and go like, yeah, this is a glass of this bottle of ridiculously expensive wine I'm going to refer to as the Drew Henson. I'm just going to laugh as I diabolically consume it. I like seeing the petty side of Tom.
Me too.
Bump, always fun to work with you. I really appreciate you being in here for Friday as well as today, and we'll look forward to talking to you on Wednesday as part of Bump Day. Maura does a great job of keeping this all on the straight and narrow and making sure we don't veer too far off course and into the gutter. Want to thank John Clayton for joining us for the morning drive, Brock Heward for Blue 42, and then Ryan Divish, who it was about time for him to get some shots back on me on cranium size. But taking some liberties with him as the referring to the size of his fitted cap as being Jupiter, when in fact my noggin may in fact be bigger. If someone asked me the size of my head, my response is jug. It's as big as a jug. And don't worry, because Michael Bumpus has you covered next on the most interactive show in Seattle sports. It's Paul Gallant Show. Michael Bumpus filling in. That's coming up next.